This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
By the way, Tim is inside the body of a dinosaur when he did that stinger for our last segment. John, please continue with that description.
Yeah, so we're talking about the Tombstone Pterodactyl shot outside of the city famous for the shootout at the OK Corral. You know, allegedly, you know, they killed this dinosaur, they drag it back into town, and that's where the article ends. But over the years, people have claimed that what happened is they pinned the wings to the wall of a barn, and they took a picture of it, like a tintype photograph. Again, you know, the year was 1890. Now, the article never says anything about a photograph, but, you know, for years and years, people would claim, people like John Keel and Ivan Sanderson, they would claim that they saw a picture of, if not a pterodactyl, a giant bird pinned to the side of a barn with all these cowboys in front of it. And, you know, back in the pre-internet age, you can take that fairly seriously because, you know, they could have only physically laid eyes on it. Now, today, if you type in Tombstone Thunderbird or Tombstone Pterodactyl picture, you'll find a ton of really well-done fakes. So today, if someone says, "Oh, I saw the Tombstone Pterodactyl picture," well, that no longer matters, you know. But, yeah, for many, many years after this 1890 story, allegedly people would claim, "Yeah, we saw the Tombstone Pterodactyl photo somewhere," but they could never actually reproduce it. I think Ivan Sanderson claimed that he had a copy and he loaned it to some other researchers and it got lost. And that's always a problem with the story's credibility. Now, the big problem with the story's credibility is in the actual article itself, published in the Tombstone Epitaph, it says that this pterodactyl was like 100 feet long, and pterodactyls were not 100 feet long. The biggest one would have like a 40-foot wingspan, and that was a genus called Quetzalcoatl something. Typically, pterodactyls were not that big. So that's a huge problem with that story, except in later years, I think around like 1910, probably between 1910 up until the 1930s, there were a few people who claimed to meet the real ranchers from the article who claimed to shoot this pterodactyl. And what these guys would always say was, "Oh, that newspaper wrong was grossly exaggerated. We never said it was that big, and we never shot it." They just said, "Yes, we saw something that looked like a dinosaur or a flying lizard. We saw it for a while in the desert. It flew away, and that was the end of the story." And then the newspaper, you know, added to it that, well, it had, you know, it was hundreds of feet long, and they killed it. And I guess I can... You would think that just two ranchers seeing a dinosaur in the desert would be interesting enough and that a reporter wouldn't have to embellish it, but who knows? But there are allegedly real ranchers who saw this thing and shot it, who are, of course, you know, by now they've passed on, they're dead, and we still don't know their names, unfortunately, but people did at least claim to meet these guys, which is more than you can say for a lot of those articles about cowboys and dinosaurs, because typically it'll just be an article about this cowboy shot this dinosaur wherever, and that's the end of it. You can't find a real witness. You can't find any follow-up story. So there's still more credibility to the Tombstone Pterodactyl than you would think.
A lot of people who are skeptical about these early newspaper stories often cite, say, like the airship stories from around the same period, saying that these newspapers were well known for printing hoaxes, hoax stories, just to draw readership. In your research, have you come across a way that, you know, you could say, "Oh yeah, this definitely this story is not above board"?
Yeah, I'm at least realistic in the sense that, you know, I have to fess up and admit, you know, some of these stories cannot possibly be true. if I try to prove every single one of them is true and I say I believe in every single one of them, nobody's going to believe in this. You know, so my opinion is that about maybe 40 to 50% of them are real, and then 50% are definitely what you'd call the yellow journalism, fake news. Not like today's fake news, which is meant to control public opinion, but fake news in the sense that back then it was literally a made-up fictional story just published in with the real stories, and they would never run a disclaimer to tell you it wasn't real. And usually you can only tell that it's made up if it's really far out. Like, there was an airship crash in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where the aliens were, they had pink skin and they dressed like Greek Romans, and it's like, obviously they're just making a jokey story, probably along the lines of drunk seeing pink elephants. I think that was probably why the aliens were pink. So yeah, sometimes, but you know, sometimes too, the stories that sound the most fantastic have the most to back them up. And my favorite is a story from Crosswicks, Ohio, that involves a carnivorous theropod dinosaur, kind of like a raptor. Not saying that's what it was, but just that type of dinosaur supposedly killed a young boy in Crosswicks, Ohio. And I really dug into that one. And there's actually a lot to it. I mean, somebody getting killed by a dinosaur, that's a pretty big deal. You would think that's a made-up story, but I found more validation on that one than I did on most others, so it was really interesting.
And when did that happen? Was that the 19th century?
Yeah, Crosswicks, again, I can't remember the exact year, but my memory is telling me 1883, but definitely between 1880 and 1890, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that's one of those stories, you know. I mean, it's one thing to say that, oh yeah, you know, people may have run across big lizards out west, but in Ohio, you know, I think a lot of people would be like, what, Ohio? But the Midwest is full of interesting cryptid stories.
Yeah, so it's the little details that give these stories validation. I guess it's, I don't think that's the word I was looking for, but they help to validate them. That's the word I'm looking for. The little details help to validate these stories. And the odd little detail about Crosswicks was that this creature lived in a hollowed-out tree. And that's an odd detail, I think, to give the story. And then several states over, way, way down, I think over in Oklahoma, the Native Americans there had a legend about a similar creature that looked just like the thing from Crosswicks, that, you know, was like a bipedal reptile, carnivorous, and it lived in a hollowed out tree. And there's no way that back in 1883, if a reporter was just concocting this story for the heck of it, he was going to be like, well, what can I, you know, he couldn't look up things on the internet back then, you know, to like, well, I'm going to add this detail to the story or that detail, or just the odds of those two details, it's very strange, you know. So that is what makes me more of a believer in the Crosswick story. And their historical society there, when I talked to them about it, they didn't roll their eyes. They were very familiar with the story and seemed to basically believe it themselves.
Was there any follow-up to that story? Because I know it ended with men chasing it into a cave, and they said that, you know, they're going to wait it out, but I don't think there was any follow-up to it, was there?
So a friend of mine gave me sort of a follow-up after the book was published, and it was too late for me to do anything about it. And I can't remember if this story took place before or after, but also in Ohio, in Zanesville, Ohio, there was a similar story with a similar creature. And I'm not sure what to think of the story yet, because they're so similar. I have to wonder, did one writer copy the other writer on this? Or did this monster pass through several different towns and people kind of had the same story about it? And I can't remember offhand if in Zanesville, Ohio, if it killed anyone. I kind of think it just was seen.
John LeMay is talking about real, allegedly, real-life dinosaurs. Of the kind you see in Jurassic Park. We got more to come with John And our special guest co-host, Tim Swartz. I'm Gene Steinberg. That all means you're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Folks, looks like food shortages are here and gonna stick around. Supply chains are breaking down, and inflation is back with a vengeance. It's all part of the shortage economy. What used to be unthinkable is now in the headlines. Are you ready? Do you currently have a stockpile of emergency food at home? If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com today, and you'll find an emergency food kit that's right for you and your family. My Patriot Supply is the largest preparedness company in America, serving millions of families like yours. Pick up a 3-month food kit that stays fresh for up to 25 years in proper storage. The meals in the kit provide over 2,000 delicious calories a day. That's important when you need to survive. Order from MyPatriotSupply.com and your food will ship fast in unmarked boxes to protect your privacy. Don't wait for permission or more empty store shelves. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
The Thousand Voices of Tim Swartz.
27 and a half, actually.
27, what, a half? What's the half?
27 and a half, yeah.
Give me the half.
I think that one would be like where, you know, you'd be like, well, and that would be it.
It's like I do Bond, James Bond. That's all I can do. It's the only imitation I can do when people think it's bad. John, do you do any imitations?
Oh, gosh. I haven't practiced any lately, so I don't want to. I don't like to know without practicing.
You imply something there that you've done some in the past.
Oh, yeah. I imitate my friends here in Roswell, but you wouldn't know who they were. So.
Okay.
No, not alien friends, just actual human beings.
Tell us more about the dinosaurs.
Oh, gosh. I just love researching these stories because my my method is if there's a witness name, I always try to research the witness as much as I possibly can. And one of the weirdest, wildest stories I found really reminds me of maybe not the movie Journey to the Center of the Earth, but the book Journey to the Center of the Earth, because in the book, you'll remember there's a scene where they go out on a raft in the underground ocean, and these two plesiosaurs like fight each other by the raft. So I found an actual newspaper article that is quite similar to it, where these two men were doing underground river rafting in a big cave in Arkansas. I didn't even know that was really a thing back in the 1800s, but apparently so. These two men claim, actually this story was written in 1909, I have it right in front of me. These two men claim, though, that they were riding a raft through an underground river in this cave in Arkansas, and they saw a plesiosaur, and they shot at it with a gun. I guess they had a gun with them on their river rafting trip. But my point is, this is one of the more fantastic stories you could ever find. Probably not true, but the witness, he was very, very real. I found all sorts of records on this guy. His name's Albert Esham of Illinois. And I contacted his town historical society, and it was so funny because they knew exactly who he was. But when I told them, well, there's this article from Arkansas that says he was in Arkansas on his business, which was cattle, and that he saw a dinosaur while he was in Arkansas, and he shot it, and they were just totally blown away because they were like, yeah, he was a real guy. We know who he is, but we have never heard this dinosaur story. And unfortunately, they weren't really able to help me with anything, but they certainly thought it was amusing. But, I mean, my thing, you know, again, back then, a lot of researchers, I think, make the mistake of they'll try to defend the story. They'll say, like, well, the newspaper says that he was a very respectable gentleman, and I'm like, you know, my grandfather was a very respectable gentleman, but he loved to play practical jokes. Respectable gentlemen do that. If it doesn't hurt anyone, you know, if you're not, like, deceiving anyone to make money off of them, you know, guys back then would make up stories. So that's not hard for me to believe. Like my grandfather here in Roswell, New Mexico, killed a jackrabbit, and he put some antlers on it and strung it up and said that he'd killed a jackalope. And he did convince his friend who lived back east, who was gullible about that stuff, that he had killed a jackalope.
I would believe that. There are people who still believe that the jackalope is an actual creature.
Well, maybe. I've just never researched jackalopes all that much. Who knows?
You don't say Jack.
Yeah.
It's like the stories of the furred trout. Along the in the east, that's it's kind of like the eastern version of the jackalope. Nobody else has heard of that one, huh?
I've heard of it. I just that one I knew wasn't real, so I never looked into it.
But. it just gets so cold.
Yeah,
out east, it's so cold that the trout have to grow fur to stay warm.
Okay, then when we talk about dinosaurs and such, we inevitably move to the Loch Ness Monster. So, John LeMay, is there a Loch Ness Monster?
Oh, I think so. Just too many people have seen it over the years. The big thing about the Loch Ness Monster is it really shouldn't be a dinosaur because dinosaurs, most of them, they think were cold-blooded. Although there are quite a few who also say, well, no, we think dinosaurs could have been warm-blooded. And, I mean, how do you prove it if there are no dinosaurs alive, you know, to actually cut open and see if that's true? So Loch Ness is definitely confusing, again, just because that lake is so cold. But again, you know, so many people see this thing, and it does look quite a bit like a plesiosaurus. They even have the underwater photographs of... Okay, this is my thing. people claim they see something that looks like a plesiosaurus. That's fine. But then people photograph it, and then people, or the scientists, I think in the late 1970s, set up these underwater motion cameras, and they got a picture of not only what looks like a plesiosaur's neck and head, but also a plesiosaur flipper. To me, it's crazier to sit there and say, well, it was really a gas-propelled log or whatever, when all these people claim they see a dinosaur in the lake. Why is it, you know, I mean, the theories the government and the skeptics come up with to explain this stuff away are odder and more far-fetched than you know, what they're trying to cover up most of the time.
Well, I wonder here, why can't we believe that some legacy creatures that may have flourished a long time ago might still be around? Why is that so hard to conceive? I think it's certainly less hard to conceive than maybe that we're being visited by aliens.
That's just, again, you know, I mean, for many years, the government didn't want us to believe in aliens. They always covered it up. Now they seem to be conditioning us and kind of prepping us very gently for this idea that, oh, yes, there are aliens. You have to kind of wonder, why is that? Why now? So, you know, I'm sure they know things about prehistoric survivors and things like that, and you have to wonder, why do they cover that up? What's the harm? So it's very suspicious.
In a lot of the stories in your books where people have seen lake monsters, the resemblance to the modern-day Loch Ness Monster is very clear. Yet at the time that these stories originally came out, nobody had ever heard of the Loch Ness Monster. So here you have – I don't think it's a coincidence that you have these similarities across the years, across the century, in fact.
Yeah, and you know what, Tim, just by saying that, you jog my memory back to the Tombstone Pterodactyls, something I forgot to bring up, which is before the Tombstone Pterodactyl, there was the Lake Elizabeth, California monster. Typically, when you say lake monster, we automatically go to the serpentine plesiosaurus. But this lake monster, when they call it a lake monster, they only meant it lived in the vicinity of the lake, but Lake Elizabeth in 1886, I think it was, had a pterodactyl they would see flying around the lake. And that was reported in newspapers, it was reported in folklore, and oddly enough, around the year 1890, it suddenly disappeared from Lake Elizabeth and was never seen again.
You know what's going to disappear this segment, because another one is waiting in the wings. John, Gene, Tim, you're in.
The Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Ladies and gentlemen, in America, we don't fear competition.
That's U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, who delivered keynote remarks at the Reagan National Defense Forum Summit in Washington on Saturday. Austin going on to say of China,
"We'll meet the challenges of the 21st century, but we will face them with fortitude and not fear. Democracy has always been our roadmap to success and security, and I wouldn't trade it for anyone else's. Thank you very much."
Meanwhile, it's going to be zooming with Biden and Putin on Tuesday, as the Kremlin has confirmed what the White House said earlier. The two leaders, Biden and Vladimir Putin, will be having a video call discussion on Tuesday, largely discussing that Russian troop buildup along its border with Ukraine. And this is USA Radio News. The Michigan mother of an accused school shooter cries as she and her husband are arraigned on four counts of involuntary manslaughter.
And how are you pleading to count one? Not guilty.
That is, James and Jennifer Crumbly were arraigned on those involuntary manslaughter charges. Their 15-year-old son allegedly used a gun that the parents bought him to shoot four people dead and wound seven others at his high school north of Detroit a few days ago. Former CNN anchor Chris Cuomo is talking about his termination from the network. On his Twitter, he said on Saturday evening that it isn't how he wanted his time at CNN to end. CNN confirming on Saturday they had fired Cuomo after more information came to light about just how much Cuomo had helped his brother amidst sexual harassment allegations that then-Governor Andrew Cuomo faced. Country music legend Stonewall Jackson's died at 89, and this is USA Radio News.
We are GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. We've got listeners, lots of them. Around the world, around the clock, our listeners do what listeners do. They listen. And you know what listeners got? Needs. Needs for your products, your services, and money to buy those needs. With our network of over 1,000 radio stations, streaming on the web, and our satellite transmissions, we're reaching our listeners with quality conservative programming. But there's something our listeners don't have. Your offer to meet their needs. Any business needs buyers. But if our listeners don't hear your message, they're still going to buy what they need. Just not from your business. So let's fix this. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message for our GCN listeners. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email. advertise@gcnlive.com.
Hi, this is James Fox. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, John LeMay, you have this point here where the cases did not occur after that period?
Yeah, so again, talking about the Lake Elizabeth monster, it disappears in 1890, which just happens to be the same exact year that the pterodactyl was shot out there in Tombstone. So a lot of people connect those dots and say, well, the Tombstone pterodactyl was the Lake Elizabeth monster. Even more shocking than that, I really wish I could remember this person's name. Someone recently discovered an article. They discovered a third article pertaining to the Tombstone pterodactyl and the Lake Elizabeth monster. What I remember is the article has this thing cited somewhere between Tombstone and California. You know, so like there is actually a good case you can make that this pterodactyl actually flew eastward from California to Arizona. I mean, I guess the only other option is a newspaper writer concocted all of these stories over the years and carefully plotted them out and had this monster fly from California to, you know, Tombstone, Arizona, or maybe a monster really just flew from California to Tombstone. Who knows?
Well, it kind of makes sense, too, that you have a supposed pterodactyl-type creature seen around a lake, because I think, yeah, aren't they saying now that they're pretty certain that, you know, members of that species and subspecies probably lived around bodies of water and, you know, caught fish like water birds do today.
Yeah, that's another great point. Again, you just jog my memory. So, yeah, so people's perceptions of dinosaurs back in the late 1800s are totally different than how scientists perceive them today. That's a good point. Back in 1890, I don't think they would have known that a pterodactyl would actually hang around the water. Back in the late 1800s, when they depicted bipedal theropod dinosaurs, they thought that they would move like kangaroos. They would kind of envision them as standing like them and bounding around like them, whereas today, a theropod dinosaur we picture running, you know, just like the ones in Jurassic Park, where the head is in line with the tail. So whenever you find a sighting from the 1800s where they see a theropod where the head is in line with the tail, that really legitimizes it in an odd way, because people back then would not have given that detail. If they were making up the story, they probably would have said, oh, it hopped around like a kangaroo. And I do have a few stories where the witnesses claimed, well, yeah, this dinosaur hopped around like a kangaroo. And unfortunately, those probably are made up, because in all likelihood, they didn't stand like that.
Well, that's a question I would ask you there. This characteristic, the hopping around like a kangaroo, is something indicates they made it up, the story. The question I have is, why would they use that characteristic?
I can't remember which paleontologist it was at the time just theorized that they thought that a theropod dinosaur would walk and get around just like a kangaroo. And then the great dinosaur illustrator Charles Knight, he would illustrate theropod dinosaurs in that manner, and they would walk upright, kind of dragging their tails, just like Godzilla does, because he's a man in a suit. So people back then, they would have seen that in the artwork, probably more than anything else. They would have just seen the artwork, and that's probably where, if they wanted to make up a hoax or a story, they would do that. But what really throws me is there's a really great dinosaur story from the Yukon Territory, where people claim they saw a Ceratosaurus, and they did claim that it hopped around like a kangaroo. So that made me think, well, you know, that's a strike against it. But something, an odd detail they gave this dinosaur that would not have lined up with the Victorian era's perception of a dinosaur was they gave it kind of like feathers and hair. Now, back then, they didn't put feathers or hair on a dinosaur, whereas today they think there's a good chance some of them did have feathers and hairy fibers and stuff. And the Ceratosaurus, they did claim, had hair. And what's even odder about the Ceratosaurus, they wrote about this thing for literally 20 years. The only reason they stopped writing about it for a little while was because World War I broke out, they got distracted. And when World War I ended, they were still writing about the Ceratosaurus of the Yukon. So that one really throws me, because again, it hops like a kangaroo, which it shouldn't do if it's a real dinosaur. But on the other hand, they wrote about this thing for 20 years. I don't think you do that with a hoax, typically, unless it really catches on, and I don't think it did. So that one's hard to figure out.
So now here's something you may not know, but in the South and the Midwest, especially in the 1930s up until the 1950s, there were a series of creature sightings, especially in smaller rural communities, of what people would describe as a screaming kangaroo. When they would see it, it would hop like a kangaroo, though they said it looked, it had reptilian types of features, and it was fond of, you know, killing livestock, chickens, goats, you know, sheep, things like that. And when they would find tracks, they would be generally three toes, like a bird or a reptile.
I had never heard that, but that's very interesting.
Look up like screaming kangaroo, because
okay,
it would have, you know, like I guess like a very vocal, you know, in the woods at night, and that's how, you know, people knew it was around. You know, somewhat similar to the later, you know, chupacabra sightings, you know, down in Puerto Rico and Mexico.
Well, since you brought that up, I will just add, you know, scientists are very arrogant. They always think they're right no matter what. And I mean, again, nobody's ever caught a dinosaur to actually examine. So who's to say maybe they didn't jump around like a kangaroo? We don't know. But, you know, that's just, again, today they don't think they would do that. But until we see a dinosaur for real, you know, who knows how they moved?
Well, and considering all the different species and types, you know, creatures that look like dinosaurs but weren't, you know, aren't officially dinosaurs. You know, I mean, they could have moved in all kinds of different ways. I mean, there was just a story I read yesterday about the possibility that was it sauropods, when they were in water, would walk around on their front 2 feet.
and let their backsides float in the water because they found tracks in Texas that seemed to indicate that. You know, something that was first suggested, I think, back in the 40s, but then, you know, was dismissed. But now, once again, you know, the theory is being brought back because of these tracks.
Actually,
you just never can tell.
Excellent. I'm going to write that down for one of my future books. It's just a good example of that. That's excellent.
One of the things that you wrote about in your book was the, and I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce this correctly, the Piazza painting along the, was it the Mississippi River in Illinois?
Yeah, don't feel bad. Your guess is as good as mine. I think it's Piazza, I guess. The Piazza.
Piazza, yeah. But, you know, supposedly the Native Americans believed that there was a, you know, like a giant flying monster, you know, in that area for a long time. But, and this is something, you know, that you may not know, that in that area, starting from that very location in Illinois, was a huge wave of, like, giant Thunderbird sightings that started from, like, the Mississippi, stretched across Illinois, and then, you know, into Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, there was that redheaded kid, Marlon something, who got picked up by the Thunderbird in the 70s, yeah.
Yes.
And that was in Illinois.
Right, right. And that was part of that wave that started around that location. So, you know, I often wonder whether or not, you know, these types of sightings do occur in cycles. You know, all of the ones that, you know, you reported about in the, you know, the Old West in the 19th century, part of this cycle, it wanes for a while, then it picks up again.
We're going to pick this up in our next segment. More to come with John, Gene, Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
You've heard that supply lines are down or moving slow.
Or moving slow.
And that most everything costs more these days.
Costs more these days.
But good news. High-quality Sunny Bay products are in stock and ready to ship now because they're made in the USA. Like our extra-long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs, are microwavable, and come in a variety of colors and patterns. What a great gift! An extra-long neck heating pad from Sunny Bay. Also available in lavender scented. Buy now in time for the holidays and avoid any shipping delays. Available on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. They're great for men or women, are reusable and easy to clean. So this year, give the gift of pain relief. An extra long neck wrap from Sunny Bay. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Order now when our stock is high and shipping is fast. And happy holidays from Sunny Bay.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
$1,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
I represent low-cost airlines, and we know a lot of you are not traveling right now, and we understand. However, if you do need to travel between now and the end of the year, now is a great time to lock in some of the lowest prices we've seen in a lifetime. Hey, in normal times, we can save you up to 75%, but now airlines are practically giving away seats. We have inside deals on over 500 airlines. Here are a few sample round-trip deals we found. Seattle to Vegas, $35. Chicago to Atlanta, $85. Los Angeles to Atlanta, $100. Of course, there are some limitations, but the airlines want your business right now. And cancellation and change fees are flexible. So fly somewhere this year, book now, save a ton, call right now.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So you were talking about the cycles of such reports. Tim Schwartz, go ahead, please.
I then threw it to John.
You got me excited. I do have things to say about that. There are definitely cycles and patterns. I have a friend who's, it's not Lyle Blackburn, it's some, Lyle Blackburn's the better known lizard man investigator, but my friend is John Staney, and John, I think, is the one who figured out that lizard man is only sighted during extreme droughts for some reason, which is an interesting pattern to notice. You were more likely to see a UFO on St. John's Day, June 24th, than any other day of the year. Who knows why? You are more likely to encounter either a ghost, a fairy, or an alien UFO at 3:30 a.m. in the morning. That is when most people have their strange paranormal sightings. So, I mean, absolutely, there are patterns to these things, and they have to mean something. We just don't know what. And Lauren Coleman wrote an interesting article about that. I think he called it the Twilight Language, and John Keel really got into all that. So, yeah, there's definitely something there.
So you talked about the lizard man. I mean, that's did you run across any cases similar to the modern day lizard man in cowboys versus dinosaurs?
Yes, I did. So like I said earlier, I found enough material for several books, and one of the books that I did do, I just collected all the stories I found from the South, and I called it Southerners and Saurians, and that is out. It's completed. And I did find an article about a lizard man. I think, though, they used the term alligator man instead of lizard man. But same description, same size, same amount of toes, I think. Sighted in 1892, then sighted, and it was in, I believe, South Carolina. I mix up South Carolina and North Carolina in my memory. Do you remember which one Lizard Man was sighted in? Was it North or South?
Pretty sure it was North Carolina, but I'm like you. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I want to say, though, that this 1892 Lizard Man was the same state. I just couldn't remember which Carolina it was. It was one of them. But that was very interesting. And again, it was my friend John. I think he was doing some research to see if he could figure out if the 1892 sighting also occurred during a drought, and it seems like he found out that it was, but yeah, short answer, yeah, I found a lizard man story from the 1800s.
Well, maybe it's like the walking catfish. You know, when things dry up, it leaves it leaves the lake or swamp where it's been living to try to find wetter climates.
What, is there actually such a thing? Are you pulling my leg? Or I've never heard of that in New Mexico.
Walking catfish?
Yeah.
It's not New Mexico. It's Florida, I think, but they're an invasive species from somewhere else.
Yeah, I'd never heard of those.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're terrible, and that's what makes them terrible is that if things start to dry up, they're able to get out of the water and kind of like flop for quite a distance to a new habitat. That's why they're not appreciated in Florida, much like a lot of other invasive species. So I'm not sure if dinosaurs have gone on that list yet in Florida.
Yeah.
Though there have been a lot of sea serpent sightings, in the Florida waters, again, very reminiscent of a lot of the accounts that you have in your books. The humps and the long neck with the little head on top. Again, I would think that there has to be some credibility to a lot of these sightings, considering that the people reporting them didn't have access to internet or popular press like we do today. What do you think about that, John?
Not a lot of. I did find some interesting Florida stories, but they're not super interesting. They're just like you said, typical. You saw the humps and the head come out of the water and stuff like that. And I do include the not real interesting stories, but I do tend to look for the more exciting ones, and I think y'all will probably find this one interesting because I'm sure you probably like the movie Valley of Guanji.
That was going to be my next question.
Oh, good. Okay, so we're on the same wavelength. Well, yeah. Go ahead and ask it just in case I'm on a different train of thought. But.
Well, no. I was going to bring up because when I ran across your books, and I have to admit that I ran across your Godzilla and Japanese monster books first, but then your Cowboys versus Saurian books, my mind immediately went to Ray Harryhausen's The Valley of Guanji. So that's where I was going with it.
Well, yeah, and what's so cool is how life does imitate art. Although in this case, so Valley of Guanji, it was finished by Ray Harryhausen, but Willis O'Brien is the one who actually came up with the idea. And Willis O'Brien, he was pretty old. He would have actually dated back to the Old West. I think I can't remember what year he was born in. I feel bad, but I know he was. I believe Willis O'Brien was a young man during what we could call the Western era. I think he did ride horses and things like that, so he had a very vested interest in the West. And he came up with the idea for Valley of Guanji.
O'Brien, Willis Harold O'Brien, was born March 2nd, 1886. So, yeah, he was young, but he would have hung out in the Old West.
Okay, good. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for confirming that for me, because I was thinking, but again, so many books, it's just hard to recall all the details. But I do think that maybe he based Valley of Guanji on, not a true story, but just it was inspired by things possibly that he had heard. And what I do know is this. I think this is so funny. So, with Valley of Guanji, everybody thinks of the famous scene where they rope the Allosaurus and all that. Well, how Valley of Guanji begins is they find a prehistoric horse called the Eohippus, and they capture that. And the little tiny Eohippus kind of leads the characters into the hidden valley. Well, I think it's so cool. I found out that in the Grand Canyon, they had a similar legend of pygmy horses that they thought might have been prehistoric remnants, because they would see these little miniature horses in a certain valley in the Grand Canyon, or I think it was maybe a certain plateau in the Grand Canyon area, actually. And they even sent out an expedition for them. I think the Smithsonian sent it out in the 1930s, and they did find pygmy horses, but they weren't the Eohippus. I think they were just these little horses that had, through years of breeding, had just gotten very, very small. But anyways, though, in kind of in the same area of Havasupai, however you say it, they did find a dinosaur petroglyph etched onto a cliff, a wall, where and it very clearly depicted some sort of theropod dinosaur standing up, which a Native American had drawn. And so, you know, to me, that's kind of like the closest you can get to the real life Valley of Gwangi, outside of also, you know, the pterodactyl they supposedly shot outside of Tombstone. But oddly enough, I even found some stuff that was similar to Edgar Rice Burroughs' The Land That Time Forgot, kind of in the Yukon region. Because Land That Time Forgot, you know, is famous because it's the islands surrounded by these ice walls. But when you get over the ice walls, you get into this land of dinosaurs. Well, they had several articles spread out over many years, kind of from the Alaska-Yukon region of this lost land, which was mostly surrounded by snow and ice until you got to this volcanic crater that had melted the snow, and it kind of had a more, I wouldn't say tropical environment, but it was just a much warmer environment, and there were explorers who claimed that they found it, and some of them claimed they would see mammoths there. At least one claimed they saw Tyrannosaurus Rex there. I think that one's probably made up. But, again, it's just interesting that you can find real-life equivalents to your favorite sci-fi movies sometimes.
Well, certainly Edgar Rice Burroughs was influenced by real things written by real people, like the Legends of the Hollow Earth.
Mm-hmm.
He cited those in setting up the frame for Pellucidar series. And then Ray Palmer took Pellucidar and created this whole series of articles for his Flying Saucers magazine, a factual magazine, as most people know, and created the theory about the Hollow Earth. So there you go. I have some other questions about theories and things that we want to ask of John LeMay, our guest this week. Tim Swartz is our special, special, very special guest co-host. He paid me to say that. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at ImmuneSupportNow.com. That's ImmuneSupportNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.